Trump, in the sixth day of a felony trial in Manhattan, said the cops guarding him in court are better used at Columbia.
When you have very radical people wanting to rip the colleges down, the universities down, and that's a shame. But it all starts with Joe Biden.
In local news, Mayor Eric Adams was enraged at the campus protests during a news conference at City Hall on Tuesday. The mayor denounced the protesters as outside agitators and promised to use NYPD intelligence to target leaders.
We have identified individuals who don't attend the schools who are on the campuses. And that is part of, we're doing a meeting today with all of our college leaders who would like to participate and give them some best practices and coordination to help them. We should address this while it is just a spark. Let's not wait until it's a blazing flat fire.
The threat comes after the passage over the weekend of a bill called FISA, giving cops broader powers to spy on Americans. Paul DiRienzo, New York.
All right. And the previous program was the Independent News Hour, heard Tuesdays at 5 p.m. It is now 1 minute past 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the evening edition of Democracy Now, coming up here on WBAI New York.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The president's decision to send riot police to pick up peaceful protesters on our campus was unprecedented, unjustified, disproportionate, divisive, and dangerous.
Yes. Columbia University's crackdown on the student Gaza solidarity encampment has inspired Palestinian solidarity protests on campuses across the country. On Monday, police raided encampments at NYU and Yale, arresting over 200 people, including students and professors. We'll speak to the head of Columbia's Institute for the Study of Human Rights.
The faculty at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights felt it was imperative to make a strong statement condemning the repressive actions against student protests, the rights of students to protest peacefully, and freedoms of speech on campus.
We'll also look back at the historic 1968 student occupation at Columbia University, which began 56 years ago today. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
As Israel's assault on Gaza enters its 200th day, Palestinian solidarity protests and encampments are spreading on college campuses across the United States, inspired by the Gaza solidarity encampment at Columbia University. Here in New York, police raided a student encampment at New York University Monday night. Police arrested more than 150 people, including students and 20 faculty members. Earlier on Monday, police at Yale University arrested 60 protesters, including 47 students who'd set up an encampment to demand the school divest from weapons manufacturers. At Columbia, the student encampment has entered its seventh day. On Monday night, about 100 Columbia student protesters and faculty took part in a Gaza Liberation Seder to mark the start of the Jewish holiday of Passover, or Pesach. On Monday, hundreds of Columbia professors held a mass walkout. This is Columbia history professor Christopher Brown.
Thursday, April 18, 2024, will be remembered as a shameful day in Columbia's history. The president's decision to send riot police to pick up peaceful protesters on our campus was unprecedented, unjustified, disproportionate, divisive, and dangerous.
Yes. Student encampments are now in place at numerous other schools, including University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, University of California, Berkeley, University of Maryland, MIT, and Emerson College in Boston. We're joined now by two professors. Joseph Slaughter is Associate Professor of English and Comparative Literature at Columbia University. He's the Executive Director of the Institute for the Study of Human Rights, which put out a public statement condemning the repression of student protests at Columbia and the calling in of the New York police, who made over 100 arrests. Also with us, New York University professor Helga Tewil-Suri. She's a leading Palestinian-American scholar of media, culture, and communication, co-editor of the book Gaza as Metaphor. Okay, we're going to begin with New York University, with Professor Tewil-Suri. You have been at the encampment since it began at NYU Monday morning at 4, and you just came from jail support, where, what, over 140 people, including 20 of your peers, NYU professors, were arrested. Can you explain what's going on at NYU?
Sure. So the students decided to start an encampment yesterday, early in the morning, in support of Gaza, in support of Palestine, also kind of in support, obviously, of other students and Columbia and otherwise. And very early on already, from the very beginning of the first tent being set up, the NYU security guards came and NYPD came. But quickly, kind of a sort of de-escalation, if you want, kind of took place between faculty members and security guards, and NYPD left, and it was peaceful all day long, there was a lot of sort of negotiation back and forth between the faculty and the security guards on behalf of the students. And at some point in the afternoon, kind of, you know, things police presence was kind of escalating, and the negotiations kind of stopped. And at some point, the NYU security guards were like, "All right, well, we're just." They made it pretty clear that NYPD presence was just sort of imminent at that point, and kind of started coming up with all kinds of reasons as to why they were going to show up and so on. Kind of kept pushing the bar in different directions, and then the NYPD came. Faculty kind of had made a sort of front line kind of buffer zone at the very beginning. They were arrested very quickly. And then the police force kind of forced in their way into this sort of plaza where the students were where the students had their tents set up, and extremely violently kind of took down all the tents, were throwing chairs around, and then arrested all of the students that were there, and then also had a third wave of arrests of other people that were kind of still in that area as well.
And to your knowledge, did the administration or the president have any discussions with the NYU faculty before calling in the police?
So I myself and a number of my colleagues in terms of like NYU faculty sort of went back and forth numerous times with a couple of the deans and the head of NYU security. And so kind of negotiated sort of back and forth about, you know, can we let the kids out to the bathroom? Can we come in? Can we go out? Can we bring more people in? Can we bring more people out? But not directly with the president of the university, which is mostly the head of security, and a couple of times with the NYPD, certainly early in the morning. And one of the things that we've seen the response of the president of the university saying that, oh, there was a breach in the barrier. And I mean, I can tell you, I was there all day. That breach in the barrier is really not a breach in that sense. I mean, there were a couple of students who sort of went in. I think the concern was as to whether or not we could control whether the people that were going onto the plaza were NYU students. And so we offered numerous times, like, well, we're happy to go around and kind of ask all the students for their ID cards. And at some point, the security guard said, okay, fine, we'll do this. And then suddenly they said no. And they sort of came up with all sorts of reasons as to why we weren't kind of following rules. And ultimately, claimed that we were trespassing on our own campus, right? I mean, this is it's a presumably private part of the university. And it was, NYU students and NYU faculty that are then charged with trespassing and then violently kind of thrown out from that space.
I want to bring Professor Joseph Slaughter into this conversation. You're at Columbia, you're Associate Professor of English and Comparative Literature there, and you're the Executive Director of the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University. It was your president, President Manoush Shafiq, who called out the New York Police Department. This was a day after she testified before Congress. Can you talk about your response to the encampment and then the arrest of over 100 students?
Thank you, Amy. I certainly can. So the response that we had at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights was that we immediately recognized the infringement of student rights to protest peacefully and freedoms of speech on campus and the threat, the dramatic threat. It raised the bringing in the police, the university president calling in the police, raised immediately, of course, the specter of 68, which I'm glad you'll be talking about. You'll be talking about a minute later. There are a number of things I would like to say about the bringing in of the police. We have actually, in the wake of 1968, a very strong set of university statutes that include things like protections for speech and protest on campus. They effectively are the constitution of Columbia University. They are the product of the good product of 1968, establishing systems of shared governance between faculty, students, and the administration. And there are emergency powers that the president has to protect faculty, students, the Columbia community in the case of imminent threats to people and property on campus that are spelled out loosely in the university statutes. The president, however, has an absolute obligation, it's spelled out very clearly, to consult with the executive committee of the university senate, which includes students and faculty, before bringing any external police forces onto campus. In this case, she approached on the very first day of the Columbia encampment, which was a peaceful, nonviolent protest, not disturbing, in my opinion, the Columbia environment, the Columbia campus, and certainly posing no threat to persons or property. She approached the executive committee of the university senate, asking for their permission to invite the NYPD in to shut down, to squelch the protest. The executive committee, the faculty and the students on the executive committee voted unanimously to reject her request to bring in the university, to bring in New York police. She did it anyway, thus violating not only the statutes, in my opinion, certainly the long traditions of shared governance, the long traditions of protest and protections of speech on campus, as well as the compact between students, faculty, and the administration to act unilaterally, essentially throwing out the rule book and throwing out the Constitution, the statutes of the university.
And Professor Slaughter, this whole issue of within 24 hours students receiving notices of suspensions, what kind of a due process occurred here?
That's a great question, and I think it's something that's extremely important for people to understand. In the letter that President Shafik sent to the NYPD, the chief of police, asking them for their intervention, she claimed that the students were being suspended for violations of university policies, and that therefore they were trespassing on Columbia property. The 108 students who were arrested were charged with trespassing. However, in fact, the vast majority of those students, there were a number of exceptions from Barnard apparently, but the vast majority of those students were in fact not suspended until 24 hours after the arrests. The suspension notices that the students received now cite the arrests themselves as part of the cause for suspension. In other words, the logic was circular. They called in the New York Police Department on the premise that the students were trespassing when they hadn't yet been suspended, and they are now suspended on the premise that they had violated New York trespassing laws, and therefore were guilty. Therefore, needed to be suspended and were guilty. In my opinion, the NYPD were called in under false pretenses by the president of the university.
I wanted to get your response to the New York Police Chief, John Chell, said that President Shafik identified the demonstration as a clear and present danger, but that officers found the students to be peaceful and cooperative.
I think this is also something that's absolutely important for people to know. In fact, John Chell, the chief of patrol, said that this disavowed the language of clear and present danger. The president had used the exact language taken from the university statutes of clear and present danger to the substantial functioning of the university. She did not, however, say that the students posed a clear and present danger to persons and property, which are the two primary criteria for bringing in police onto campus to protect to protect the Columbia community. She, in other words, at the moment in which she was making a speech for which she could be held legally responsible, that is writing to the police department, to call in the police department, she refused to use the, to say that the students were a clear and present danger to Columbia faculty and persons and property. In other words, while she was sending messaging out, while the university administration was sending messaging out through all of its channels and by email and public announcements saying that these students posed a danger, that's not the language they used to talk to the to invite the police in. The police, the chief of patrol said, in fact, that the students posed no danger, disavowed the language of clear and present danger, saying that's President Shafiq's words, not his, and that the students were protesting peacefully, saying what they wanted to say peacefully, and in no way resisted arrest.
What happened yesterday? Talk about the, you have the student encampment on the South Lawn, and then you have the professors going into Lowe Library for a meeting.
So the university has is being run as a sort of adhocracy at this point. The senior administration making up policies and procedures and prohibitions on the fly, changing them in the middle of the night. One of those prohibitions was that no protests could take place on the steps of Lowe Library. I assume you will be showing images later about protests in 1968 of Lowe Library. The faculty, in response, a broad coalition of faculty, in response to the student arrests and to the bringing of police onto campus, chose yesterday to walk out at 2 p.m. in full regalia for many of us, to stand on the steps of Lowe Library in front of the statue of Alma Mater, a heralded tradition of protest on campus, to defend our students, to defend the rights of students, to denounce the the police actions and the president's sanctioning of the police actions, to call for the immediate repeal of the suspension of our students, their restoration of all of their rights, the expungement of their records, and to submit an appeal for a vote of censure in the University Senate of Manoush Shafiq and the senior administration.
And Professor Slaughter, not only at Columbia, but at universities across the country, we are repeatedly hearing that these protests in support of the Palestinians who are being attacked in Gaza, that this is making life unsafe. These protests are making life unsafe for Jewish students on these campuses. What's your response to that?
So I have multiple responses. The messaging out of Columbia has consistently emphasized the dangers of these protests, in particular to Jewish and Israeli and pro-Israeli students. In fact, the messaging has been one of fear towards those students explicitly. The messaging at the same time has been one of fear to students, to pro-Palestinian students, to anti-Zionist Jewish students, to other students who want to think about and talk about and discuss the questions of Palestine, the questions of Israel, which is the duty of a university to think about these hard problems. The message to those students have been is also fear, but a fear by omission. The university not ever acknowledging any of the fears, the Islamophobic actions that are taking place on campus, any of the attacks that have taken place on campus, and so in some ways, the university itself, it seems to me, in its public messaging since October, has ginned up fear both among Jewish students and pro-Palestinian students. The campus, in fact, the kind of impromptu and improvised policies that the administration has unilaterally imposed without consultation from the University Senate, without the traditions of shared governance, have in fact, in my opinion, chilled speech, not just of pro-Palestinian protesters, but also of pro-Israeli protesters, and has absolutely chilled speech in classrooms and in other kind of forums on campus to be able to even talk about the problems that lie at the bottom of all of this, that is Palestinian rights to self-determination, Israeli rights to security.
And Professor Tawil Suri, what do you see happening in the coming days at NYU?
Oh, it's hard to say, but maybe quickly, could if I could just add one thing. I mean, a lot of the students and the faculty at NYU who were part of the encampment and in general are part of sort of like SJP and FJP and so on are actually Jewish, right? So that's number one. The other thing that I think is, I don't know how much news has sort of come out since yesterday about what happened, but when the NYPD finally came in and sort of broke the encampment apart, it was in the middle of Muslim Maghrib prayers, like the evening prayers, right? So I think that kind of speaks a little bit to what you're saying, right, in terms of like the way that it's not really about sort of one group or the other, but also how different groups are kind of treated. In terms of what happens at NYU from this point on, I mean, I can tell you the students feel very sort of spirited in the sense of like they want to kind of continue. You know, for them, it's about, okay, fine, you took us down, but we're going to continue. We have the right to protest. We have the right to academic speech. We have the right to free speech. And we have the right to kind of stand up for our pro-Palestinian voices, basically. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I can't sort of say how the university is going to respond, but, you know, I think the students are going to sort of have to figure out, like, how are they going to be able to protest? So unlike Columbia, you know, NYU is this kind of, somewhat urban kind of campus, right? So there is no lawn, if you want, to kind of go and protest on. And so I think that's part of what we saw yesterday is this plaza where the encampment took place is private property, but you know the moment you step off of the steps it becomes New York City property, right? So there's a very sort of blurry line as to where does the NYPD kind of sort of stop its sort of jurisdiction, if you want to call it that, versus where does campus security stop? So I think that's a little bit different in terms of NYU, and I think that's a sort of challenge, if you want, that is faced by the students. But I think the students kind of are very resolved in the sense of like we're going to keep going with this.
Professor Tewesuri, the New York Times subheadline was dozens were arrested on Monday at NYU and Yale, but officials there and at campuses across the U.S. are running out of options to corral protests, they said. What are the options that officials have at these universities besides arrests and suspensions?
That's a great question. I mean, maybe first to kind of have a discussion, right? Like kind of, you know, be sort of very open about like, all right, well, let's sort of sit down and talk about these things. Let's host a number of different events. Let's host a number of different speakers. Let's allow for these kind of speakers and events to happen. I think what we see is also a sort of shutdown of certain kinds of things, right? Let's allow for whether it's classes or teach-ins or all of that. And in terms of the protesters, I mean, yesterday there was a sort of, you know, I think part of what happened certainly at NYU is that there was a kind of compression, if you will, right? So people in support were coming to demonstrate and speak with the students and so on, but couldn't kind of access, right? So they'd bleed into the streets and the students can't get out. And so sort of a bit of a sort of pressure cooker in the sense that, you, of course, you're creating this kind of barricade that becomes very difficult to manage, but it's also becoming a way that, you know, the barrier itself is actually creating part of the problem, right? So I think if you kind of have a way to kind of figure out how to sort of allow people to move around to not necessarily prevent them from moving, I think a lot of problems would kind of not exist to begin with.
Same question, Professor Slaughter.
Thank you. One of the things that President Shafik said in response to a question at Congress last week that I found most disturbing that hasn't been commented on at all is that what she's learned over this last 6 months is that our rules weren't made for this moment. And this justifies in some ways the administration throwing out the rule book and coming up with impromptu policies on how to police speech. In fact, the rules were made exactly for this moment. They were made for 1968. They were made from 1968 and to prevent a repeat of 1968. We have an extremely robust rules for the protections of speech and protest on campus. We have an extremely robust system for protecting due process rights for students when they have violated or are accused of having violated those protections. If this administration had chosen to lean into the statutes of the university and the rules about the rules that have kept our community together for 50 years, we would be in a much better place with faculty and students on board.
Well, I'm glad you went back in history because that's where we're going right now. Professor Slaughter of Columbia University and Professor Helga Tewesuri of New York University. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. 56 years ago today, hundreds of students at Columbia University here in New York started a revolt on campus campus. They occupied five buildings, including the president's office and the library. The students barricaded themselves inside the buildings for a week. They were protesting Columbia's ties to military research and plans to build a university gymnasium in a public park in Harlem. The protests began less than 3 weeks after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. The 1968 Columbia uprising led to one of the largest mass arrests in New York City history. A week into the strike, April 30th, New York City police stormed the campus of Columbia University. Hundreds of students were injured, 700 arrested. Images of the police assault were broadcast around the country. This is a clip from Columbia Revolt by Third World Newsreel.
They got over 700 of us on charges of criminal trespass, resisting arrest, all kinds of other some of which was real and some of which was completely fake.
I know of nurses and doctors that pleaded with the police not to proceed, to please let these men alone. And they would say, no, that's a getaway, this is our job.
I was arrested. They would not allow me to see a doctor. I had broken ribs, my face was cut, I got hit with a pistol under the eye, and I was bleeding there, and I wasn't allowed to see a doctor until I got out of court, which was approximately 10 hours later.
But I was awarded a fellowship for next year. What the hell does, what does it mean? I'm going to strike, but I hope every fact, I don't see how any teacher, I don't see how any student can attend the school anymore. And I was completely liberal about the whole thing, but this bus has radicalized everybody and me very personally.
No, I was a non-violent student. I was completely passive. I didn't care what happened. I was completely neutral. I'm not neutral anymore. I'll occupy buildings tomorrow.
The 1968 Columbia uprising inspired student protests across the country. This is Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez, then a Columbia student, speaking during the strike.
Now we want to go into the dorms with all of you, with some of you who may not agree with a lot of what we've been saying here, who have questions, who support us, who want to know more. Let's go to the dorms. Let's talk quietly in small groups. We'll be there, and everyone in Livingston Lobby, Inferno Lobby, and Carmen Lobby. We'll be there, and we'll talk about the issues involved, and we'll talk about where this country is going, and where this university is going, and what it's doing in this society, and what we would like it to do, and what we would...
was Juan Gonzalez, courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and Juan is here now, courtesy of Democracy Now!, co-host of Democracy Now!. Juan, talk about that moment. We're talking about 56 years ago. Talk about then and what you see as the echoes of today.
Well, Amy, I think the important thing to understand is that the Columbia strike unfolded over several weeks. The first week was the week of the occupation, but because of the brutality of the attacks by the police, as you said, more than 150 people were hospitalized the night of April 30th. It led to a massive strike of the entire university. Over 10,000 students shut the university down for the rest of the semester. And I think what is really unusual about this process is that here the university moved in very quickly. And also, these students were not disrupting classes. We occupied buildings. We did not allow classes to go forward in 1968. But classes were going forward. The students were camped out peacefully on the lawn. So the disproportionate nature of the response of the university, the quickness with which it responded without even consulting or listening to the faculty, is really astounding. And the other aspect of it is that when we were suspended, and there were many of us suspended. Before we were suspended, we were allowed to appear before a tribunal to plead our cause. There was at least the rudiments of due process. Here, there is no due process. The university is already within 24 hours saying that the students are suspended, even though there is yet no legal proof that any of these students knowingly participated in illegal actions. So I think that what really strikes me about this response is the total flouting of any kind of democratic process by the current administration compared to what happened in 1968. And of course, I think the other aspect of it is we were fighting at the time against the racism of the university toward Harlem and against the Vietnam War. These students are protesting a genocide that is occurring before the eyes of the entire world that is being funded by U.S. arms. And if anyone has the right to rebel and to stand up against injustice, these students do. And I personally only wish that more students would follow their examples across the country and continue to disrupt disrupt the process that is occurring right now to at least allow the people of Palestine to understand that the American people are not united behind this genocide.
And Juan, do you have messages for the college presidents from your experience 56 years ago with the mass arrests of 700 students, which only provoked more protests?
Well, I have to say that President Shafiq, who I understand is a Baroness,